This podcast is for investment professionals only. The value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The information is not an offer, solicitation, or recommendation of any funds, services, or products, or to adopt any investment strategy.
Welcome to the Investor Download, the podcast about the themes driving markets and the economy now and in the future. I'm your host, David Brett. Back in 1990, the film Pretty Woman was released. In it, Richard Gere's financier meets and falls in love with Julia Roberts' prostitute.
Hey, Sugar, you looking for a date?
No, I want to find Beverly Hills. Can you give me directions?
Sure. For $5.
Ridiculous.
Crash this one up to 10.
You can't charge me for directions.
I can do anything I want to, baby. I ain't lost.
But beyond the love story, there's a tale of finance woven into the subplot. Gere plays venture capitalist Edward Lewis, and he's trying to acquire a shipping company from the Moores family. The Moores family, David and his grandfather James, aren't happy about the deal Gere's character Lewis is trying to bully them into.
Mr. Lewis, my grandfather believes the men who create a company should control its destiny. Let me put it another way. Between your public statements and the rumors flying around on this thing, we find it very hard to figure out what your real intentions are. Mr. Lewis, if you were to get control, and I don't think you will, but if you did, what do you plan to do with the company?
Break it up and sell off the pieces?
I'm sure you understand I'm not thrilled at the idea of your turning 40 years of my work into your garage sale.
At that time, it illustrated the outside world's view of private equity. Private equity refers to finance firms that invest in private businesses or do deals to take public companies private. Infamous as corporate raiders and renowned for hostile takeovers, they've become associated with asset stripping, buying vulnerable companies and selling off their assets that individually were worth more than their whole.
So you don't actually have $1 billion, huh?
No, I get some of it from banks, investors. It's not an easy thing to do.
And you don't make anything?
No.
And you don't build anything?
No.
So what do you do with the companies once you buy them?
I sell them.
Here, let me do that. You sell them?
Well, I don't sell the whole company. I break it up into pieces, and then I sell that off. It's worth more than the whole.
So it's sort of like stealing cars and selling them for the parts, right?
Yeah, sort of. But legal.
At the same time, they laid waste to the labor force to cut costs and improve profitability. By the late 1980s, around the time Pretty Woman was filmed, private equity had become big business. At the start of the decade, the industry would raise just over $2 billion annually. By 1989, that figure stood at nearly $22 billion. The 1980s buyout boom, as illustrated in Pretty Woman, was allegedly powered by a backlash against the imperial CEO, whom, just like we assume the character of James Moores to be, was more interested in empire building than profits.
Yeah, I don't think that's fair. I think ultimately the success of private equity comes down to growing the businesses that we're investing into and to generating good returns. So I think egos that are looking purely to expand and empire build aren't necessarily going to drive those returns and drive those profits. So I think that's probably slightly miscommunicated by the press.
That's Paul Lammercraft, a senior investment director for private equity at Schroeder Advec. Paul's joining the pod to shed some light on the role of private equity in investing, how it's being opened up to retail investors, and why he feels the status it's garnered as the bad boy of investing has been unfair. The roots of private investment dates back to the 1850s, when merchant bankers financed railroads and industrial concerns. They helped build infrastructure to support business growth and the turnaround of struggling companies. But the origins of modern private equity began in 1958, when the Small Business Investment Act was passed in the US. It allowed administrators to license small investment companies to finance and manage entrepreneurial businesses. It helped bridge a major gap that existed in the capital markets for long-term funding for growth-orientated small businesses. It was no longer just the preserve of the wealthy elite. But it didn't take long for private equity investors to turn from reputable investors supporting growth businesses to vulture capitalists, as they became known, pecking at the carcasses of susceptible companies. Fast forward just over half a century, and private equity investors are now trying to reclaim their reputation as nurturing financiers, garnered by their ancestors over 150 years ago.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, you're listening to the Investor Download.
2021 has been a record-breaking year for private equity. The pandemic, low interest rates, and low returns have created a dream environment. The global buyout industry has raised a record $1.6 trillion, according to data from Preqin. And funds are now under pressure to spend that cash. Private equity investors have become white knights for many businesses that have struggled during the pandemic as economies have shut down and borders have closed. And they've become an integral supporter of companies where demand for their products has been supercharged by the pandemic. The UK in particular has been a hotbed for deals as corporate raiders target cheap British companies on the stock market. There have been 401 private equity deals so far in the year in the UK, worth more than nearly $50 billion, according to data from Refinitiv. That's the highest number in the first half of a year since data began being collected in 1996. But the most high profile is still going on. There's a bidding war for Grosser Morrisons, and private equity firm Fortress recently improved its offer for the UK's fourth largest supermarket to nearly £7 billion in an attempt to win over reluctant shareholders. Tellingly, Fortress has been at pains to reassure the UK government and farmers that it will be a good steward of the business, retaining its Bradford headquarters, safeguarding pensions and maintaining the £10 an hour minimum wage for staff. Yet these assurances run counter to the asset-stripping, debt-heavy private equity playbook as modelled in other private equity takeovers.
Yeah, I think that typically is a little bit more media sensation. I think that's something that may have happened historically going back 20, 30 years. But really, private equity is more about growing businesses. As I say, it's about identifying high-quality businesses that can be transformed. It's about investing into them. It's about building them, expanding them, improving the way that they operate. And ultimately, that growth then leads to further employment.
That's Paul Lammercraft again.
So if you consider the last 18 months of the pandemic, you'll see that there's been businesses that have maybe slowed down in terms of their growth trajectory. So there's an opportunity for private equity investors to be able to support those businesses, inject more capital, and get them back onto a strong growth trajectory going forward.
There are plenty of high-profile examples. Fund firm Apollo ploughed billions into supporting online travel agent Expedia, helping Mexico's national airline Aero Mexico look for a way out of bankruptcy and providing financing for car rental company Hertz. Lammercraft uses a more unique and perhaps less obvious example of a company called WaterLogic, which supplies high-tech and earth-friendly water coolers to homes and offices. As workers stayed home, the chat around the water cooler vanished, and water dispenser usage fell off a cliff. Funds were pumped in to support a business that provides a service Lammercraft believes we will still need in the future.
And then at the same time, there's businesses that will have been supercharged through that period. They will have experienced some really strong growth as a result of their business model. And again, there's an opportunity for private equity investors to support such businesses and extend that strength of growth that they're seeing so that we can continue to see businesses prosper, businesses grow, and ultimately generate significant value over the longer term. We've seen some businesses that have seen their business plans, which may have projected out over the next 3 to 5 years, actually being achieved within one to two years. So that has really been supercharged and is clearly something that we believe is here to stay.
Cashless payments is a prime example. Online trading boomed in lockdown and its growth is only set to continue. Payment solutions are the critical plumbing that sits between merchants and customers. Lammercraft highlights a company called Rapid. Rapid offers fast local cashless payments anywhere in the world, enabling companies across the globe to access markets quicker than ever before. It needed funding to help double its engineering and products teams, while new customers can adopt the service faster than ever before.
And I think the essence here really is about looking for the ability to transform businesses. So that can entail a number of different opportunities, whether that's through introducing best practices to those businesses, whether it's helping them compete on a global scale by assisting them in launching maybe new products or entering into new markets, or even considering potential M&A and bolt-on opportunities that can strengthen that business further by adding products, by extending their customer base, or by entering into new markets, as I say. So all of these opportunities and all of these options can give us the ability to transform businesses, build them, grow them, add value to them. And then ultimately that can lead to a boost in employment as well as those businesses grow and expand over the 3 to 5 year horizon that we would typically look at.
Which on the surface appears to be contradictory to the media's portrayal of the private equity industry.
I saw a report the other day where private equity backed companies are growing their workforce at 5 times the rate of a standard European business. So I think those facts that aren't necessarily quite so widely reported are more the truth of the private equity industry. It's about developing, growing, and generating strong returns. And I think that's probably what should be focused on a little bit more than it typically is.
But why would businesses opt to take on private equity investment instead of tapping public markets, like the stock exchange, for money?
I mean, businesses that that have private equity investment typically know the funds that they have available to them. They build their plan around those funds. So they have that certainty of knowing that the funding is there, and they have the support of the fund managers and the private equity backers to help them over the future 3 to 5 year business plan that they'll have in mind. So they're not therefore sideswiped by increase in capital, reductions in capital, or changes to the capital base that they have available to them, which means that they can plan for that longer term. They don't have to be distracted by very short term quarterly earnings releases that are prevalent in the public markets. They can focus on making the right decisions over a 3 to 5 year period and beyond to generate good, strong returns over that period. Private investors will be very close to the management teams of the businesses that they're backing. So we will be looking at and attending board meetings and reviewing how progress is developing. But that's done obviously outside of the public market's gaze. But it does mean that some changes can have to take place. If that's the case, that the plan is not being met, then there may be a need to make some changes, whether that's with management, whether that's with the business plan. But those changes can be made with a longer term view in mind.
So does that mean that private equity investors have a closer relationship with the businesses and the owners that they're invested in rather than they would if they invested through public markets?
Yeah, absolutely. Typically, you won't be having hundreds of different companies that you're looking after or you're involved in. You'll have a select few businesses that you're really close to, that you really want to build that relationship with the management team, understand the business completely, and you are interacting with the management team often on a monthly basis, maybe more often than that.
But how, as a retail investor, can you get involved in private equity?
Get in touch with us by email at schroederspodcasts@schroeders.com or visit our website schroeders.com/investor-download.
Well, the argument might rage over the merits of private equity and their role as investors. One thing remains abundantly clear. While private equity investing may no longer be the sole domain of the elite, up until recently, it's pretty much still been a closed shop for retail investors.
I think there's also a key element that has developed in the last decade, which is making private equity more accessible to more investors as an asset class. So historically, as you say, it's been the domain of large institutions that are able to invest millions at any point in time and have those investments invested for 10 years plus. I think there's now more innovation around the structures in private equity that can open up the asset class to more investors, maybe with less capital at their disposal to invest, but also the arrival of such instruments as investment trusts can help to get retail investors to be able to get access to private equity as well. So there's a number of different developments within the industry that are helping to broaden private capital as from beyond the fringe market that historically it was.
So why would an investor choose to invest in private equity over public markets?
So private assets tend to be less volatile. I think the public markets, as we've seen over the last 18 months, have huge volatility embedded in them. Those markets can lurch from panic situation to full-on greed situations. So you can see the volatility in the public markets be relatively extreme, and obviously particularly over the last 18 months. Whereas the private markets tend to be a little bit less volatile. Valuations are typically done every quarter, so you're not seeing daily gyrations in valuations that we see in the public markets. So I think that gives investors in private markets a bit more comfort, a slightly easier sleep at night, as they can see the steady progress that's generally been made in private assets.
The potential for higher returns is also a factor. As the AIC Public Pension Study reported in 2019, private equity continues to lead all asset classes in long-term investment performance, with private equity's medium 10-year annualised net return of 10.2% surpassing public equity's 8.5%. But there are risks.
There is an element of that illiquidity attached to private assets, absolutely. I think there's, as I touched on a wee bit earlier on, there are some new structures that are coming into place, such as investment trusts, which do offer investors in private assets more liquidity and the ability to exit that holding at any point in time. But there is generally with private assets, which are will take longer to sell, there is an increased illiquidity to those assets. So I think that has to always be borne in mind. Anyone investing in private equity should always have that as in the back of their mind when they're making that investment.
There's also this issue with valuing businesses. On the public market, it's easy for an investor to see what a company's worth because of its share price. Private equity investors have no such luxury.
Yeah, it's difficult, and it's very much an art over a science here. There's a number of different metrics that are used when you're valuing private companies. Excuse me. And that can depend to some extent on the stage of development of the underlying asset that you're valuing. So larger, more established, profitable, privately owned businesses can draw comparables with publicly listed companies. So there'll be a set of companies that trade in that sector that you can look at to see how the public markets are trading, and you can apply some element of that valuation to the private companies too. You can also look at transactions that have taken place both publicly and privately historically to get a sense of what multiples and prices and valuations are being applied. And then when you're talking about slightly earlier stage businesses, you need to look a bit further forward. There are probably less of those actually listed on the public markets to be able to draw comparables with. So you would typically look more closely at the business models, the forecast, and then apply discounted cash flow models to arrive at some sense of valuation there. And often you apply a range of these different valuation techniques to ultimately arrive at a valuation that you're comfortable with when you're ultimately investing in the first place. But it all comes down to the returns that you can generate. So your returns will be determined by what you exit that asset for. So making sure you get in at the right valuation and a valuation that you understand and can support is obviously critical to making sure you can generate the ultimate returns.
But there are worries that as private assets become more accessible, returns will be diluted.
No, I think there's plenty of opportunity. So I think the returns can be shared more broadly. But I think the skill set that comes into private equity, something we refer to as the complexity premium, where you're backing high quality teams that have been in existence for decades that are building their expertise in identifying high quality businesses, in investing into them, in transforming them, and ultimately into growing them. Those traits remain and are being improved all the time as well. So my view is that will continue to generate strong returns even as additional capital flows into the industry, which we're hoping it will with the democratization, as we say.
And what about the long-term prospects for private equity?
Private equity is here to stay. And I think there are some fantastic opportunities going forward. And I think those are going to continue to expand. There's a huge universe of opportunity in terms of companies that they can be invested into and supported by private equity. So I'm very confident about the future. I think the more that we can get investors to get access to private equity, the better. We've talked about the democratization of private assets, and I think that private equity is a fantastic opportunity for retail investors to be able to gain some access. So I'm very hopeful and optimistic of the future in private equity. I see some fantastic returns to continue, and some great businesses to be developed through the private assets world.
Private equity seems not to be quite the monster it's been portrayed as in the media. And while it largely remains the playground for big investors, steps are being made to open it up to retail investors like you or I. And rather than the destroyer of businesses, the pandemic is showing how private equity can help build businesses for the future. Which brings us back around to Pretty Woman. What did Gere's character decide to do with the Morse family shipbuilding company?
Mr. Morse, my interests in your company have changed.
What is it you're after now, Mr. Lewis?
Well, I no longer wish to buy your company and take it apart. But I don't want anyone else to either. And it is still extremely vulnerable. So I find myself in unfamiliar territory. I want to help you.
Mr. Lewis and I are going to build ships together. Great big ships.
And one of the bad boys of investing rises to the rescue again. Here's what else investors are talking about. Have you ever wondered why there's been such a marked pickup in the amount of UK businesses that have been bid for in recent years? Ask fund managers Bill Casey and Nick Kissack. 2021 has been no exception, with a record number of deals in the first half. And there's no sign of this momentum slowing. Earlier this month, Meggitt, the UK-based aerospace and defence equipment supplier, received a bid from Parker Hannifin in the US at a whopping 71% premium. Bill and Nick write that investors should see the headline-grabbing bid for the British defence company in context of a persistent and pervasive discount across multiple sectors and individual UK-listed stocks. You can read the full article at schroders.com/insights, where you can also watch and listen to much, much more. Well, that was the show. We very much hope you enjoyed it. If you want to find out more, check out our website, schroders.com/theinvestor download. You can also get in contact with us about anything in the show or ideas for future shows at schroderspodcast@schroders.com. Please remember to subscribe to us at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to leave a review. We're now doing one show a week, which will be available every Thursday from 5 p.m. UK time. Thanks very much for listening, but above all, keep safe and go well. Cheers.